Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
In 60 minutes' time, we will have reached half distance of the 59th edition of the 24 Hours of Daytona. And we're at a phase now which fits nicely with pit stops, by the way. And some of the callers include Olivier Plas, Meyer Shank Acura, and the Simon Pagenaud Ally Cadillac number 48 car. Also in from the lead of LMP2, Giorgio Sinigiotto for Cetelar Racing. So this may, to a certain degree, answer the question as to why the Dallara was out front from the Orica, when generally speaking, the Orica chassis is quicker, but the Dallara owes a pit stop, which it can serve now, and that will make 17 stops for the Italian chassis. And behind it, four of the French cars, the Orica LMP2 07, but with the same engine from Gibson, based in a place called Repton in Derbyshire, that provide very solid race engines, indeed incredibly reliable, this 4.2-litre V8. 11 pit stops completed for the Nick Tandy Corvette, the silver example of the C8R, car that he shares with Alexander Sims and Tommy Milner. It was Tommy in prior to Nick, so therefore Alexander Sims to come next at the end of this particular stint. Now, those cars, all of the GTLMs, will have pitted, of course, under the previous caution, so should be relatively good for fuel at this point, and it means that we can add a few extra laps onto the 33 laps that cars were managing earlier on. Nick did 24 laps leading into the caution, and has done almost the same again in green flag running, 21 laps completed. So we'll be fine for another at least 10, possibly 12, depending on whether he can get the same sort of mileage that his teammate Tommy Milner could do, as back onto the throttle goes Simon Pagenaud, unusually with a clear road out front. Now, Pipa Durrani was obviously wasting no time at all in the 31 car, scything his way through traffic. I mentioned him picking up a little bit of a toe on the Ferrari into Speedway Turn 1 as well. And will pit on this lap, together with Philippe Albuquerque and with Kevin Magnussen. So they've all, the top three, Jeremy, have all come in. And, we've had a good portion of green. I'm going to guess 22 laps of it.
Yeah, and pit stops now for each of the race leaders. This is on schedule, I think, for all of them. We saw number 48 car and number 60 come in a couple of laps ago, so they were the first two to make their pit stops on this sequence. And now everybody else onto pit lane as well. Looks like a fresh set of tyres there for K-Mag, and away he goes for the Cadillac team. And Albuquerque, he's ahead of the number 31 car still. That's the same order in which they came onto the pit lane. The number 10 car, we can't see, but we'll wait and see where it is. It should be a few seconds ahead of this pair as they make their way out of the pit lane, because that's the order in which they came in. It's about 3.5 seconds between Albuquerque and the rest of the field.
Yeah, it is a little bit further up the road, I believe, but we'll need them all to head through the next timing loop to get a real reflection. But all three have left the pit lane with absolutely no grip at all, because no tyre warmers and the Michelins will be pretty much stone cold. And this is an opportunity maybe for some overtaking to be done. That was Simon Pagenaud, who hasn't just come out from the pits, maybe able to get ahead of Chase Elliott. And I think the 0-1 car of Kevin Magnussen, in one fell swoop there, diving up the inside into the West Horseshoe went the Ally car. And that is the advantage that tyres that have been heated for a lap give you over those that haven't yet got any temperature. Neck and neck between Magnussen and Elliott in the 31 car then. But as they head through the next split, or rather towards the end of the lap, we'll get a true reflection of the order. Before that, might even see an overtake between the 01 and the 31, because Chase Elliott got incredibly close to the tail of Kevin Magnussen but couldn't spot an opportunity to slither up the inside there into the bus stop. Might try it again into turn one, but this is a delicate portion of the race, I would say. Philippe Albuquerque will cross the line as the new leader, but you've got those cars that pitted a lap or two before, which are firmly taking advantage, and it's brilliant to see. Let's see whether Simon Pagenaud can get even closer to Philippe Albuquerque. I'm rather licking my lips here at this part of the race, John Hindhoff. You're in for a good portion of it, I would say. We are under an hour away from half distance, and still no real indication to the pattern of this, apart from the fact that we've still very much got five DPIs in the hunt for the win, and possibly the chance for the Mazda to catch up three of the laps that it lost earlier on.
Yeah, that's the only disappointment for me, if I'm honest, Johnny, is that the Mazda number 55 is not there, but still the two Acuras and the three Cadillacs, and still that slight differential in various parts of the fuel and tyre stint as to who has the pace in those Cadillacs. I'm finding that extraordinarily interesting. And in the other classes as well, I still think the Corvettes are doing what they need to do, although they're a little bit closer than they have been. They were normally about a second apart. They're actually now just 0.3 apart. But the BMWs all of a sudden coming to life as well in the darkness hours. And the joy is that we're going to take it up to pretty close to sunrise as JP takes his leave. Jeremy Shaw stays with me in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. And we join up with our American TV network colleagues in 10 minutes' time as the now traditional night owl shift, where we get the reins from NBC, and Rooftop Ray will be our guide and help for 3 hours between 3 and 6 here at Daytona. And Nick Damon will be joining us as well for part of that stint. So, Jeremy, the race not halfway through, as JP says, and I am liking what I'm seeing. It seems that despite this being the first race of a new season, the IMSA technical team have once again done their calculations, and certainly at the sharp end of the field. You would expect it in LMP2, where the drivetrains are all the same. Certainly, at the sharp end of the field, I don't think there's anybody who's got a massive advantage here. It's really ebb and flow depending on who's in the car and where they are in the stint.
Completely agree with you, John. Absolutely. They seem to be very closely matched. The number 60 car, yeah, seems to be struggling a little bit, I think. But you know, he's hanging in there, you know, not even to halfway yet, so no point in extending anything at this stage in the race. It's certainly been interesting over the last hour or so to see the number 10 car going so well. Philippe Albuquerque, first of all, Alexander Rossi did a super long stint in that number 10 car. He took the wheel of the car at 7 hours into the race. He drove for about two and a half hours before handing over to Philippe Albuquerque, and he was absolutely flying, set that car's best laps of the race so far. And then Albuquerque has continued on from there. He took the lead at the restart about 40 minutes or so ago, a bit more than that, 45 minutes or so ago, and has been out front ever since. So, you know, the Acura certainly is looking good. we thought perhaps the Acuras might struggle a little bit, or they thought they might struggle a little bit, but the emphasis on the little there, because there really doesn't seem to be much to choose between any of them, John. And, you know, the Mazda, having lost that lap early on, missed the opportunity to get back onto the lead lap quite a long time ago now, then finally had the opportunity during the most recent caution period, but unfortunately only to suffer a problem with a tail, which has now cost them, instead of gaining one lap back on the field, they lost three. So that was rather unfortunate. But having struggled, I think, through the evening, John, the Mazda has looked a lot better over the last couple of hours of the race, and it has been running very much on a pace with everybody else. So if they can make up those three laps, and they certainly have plenty of time to do that, there's absolutely no reason to count out that number 55 car.
Oh, I totally agree. And we've seen, and we know from both of their full season drivers, in Ollie Jarvis and Harry Tinknell, that they have super duper pace when they need to. So if they're in with any kind of sniff, I think they'll give it a go. Somebody's just asked on the Twitter, at IMSA Radio, R24 Radio, Jeremy, and I meant to ask you this earlier on, lap distance record here was set last year, but for the life of me, I can't find where I put it in my notes.
I can't find mine, but I think probably not. We've had quite a few cautions already earlier on. We've had a lot of green flag running lately, but no, I don't think the record is going to be under threat.
We're looking at a tad under 800 laps here at the moment, according to the computer. I'll dig it out. It's on a piece of paper somewhere here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Nick Damon joining us just before 3 a.m. We're, as I say, going to join our network colleagues at 3 Eastern. So good morning to you, Nicholas.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Jeremy. How are we all this fine morning?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. What's caught your eye then whilst we haven't been talking?
I think I've come back to a situation where, you know, after what, three hours away, where you've still got the first four cars within 10 seconds and the fifth car not much further back. Within the classes, again, it still remained very close. So it seems, I'm not quite sure how much green running we've had in those 3 hours, but yeah, apart from the ever splitting up in many ways of the LMP2, everyone else is really getting down, turning laps, and we're just working through that meat of the race. We haven't got to halfway yet. Everyone's now pushing towards daylight, which is what, almost exactly 4 hours away, and see where they are before they start making their plans for what happens on Sunday.
833 laps. And I still haven't found the piece of paper, but Johnny Palmer has saved me. that's the distance record set last year. That's the number 47, Cetilar Dallara. Giorgio Serna Giotto behind the wheel of the 47 car. Seventh position overall for the LMP2 leader. A lot of people saying how nice it is to see the Dallara challenging the usual mass ranks of Orica's. We've got the Eurasia Ligier as well. And it is. And it's a bonny car, that. If I'm absolutely honest, I'm not sure that's the best colour scheme for it, although I like the sort of chrome finish on parts of the car. Got quite a swoopy front end, which I think the old dark front end is going down the inside of the Sun Energy One Racing AMG GT and also past the Motel 6 car as well, which is still in 7th position, lit up on the side of there on the in the GT3 category car. But they've had a good run, and at the moment lead by, let's call it a minute, shall we, for Mathieu Vaxvier of Tower Motorsport, then the Wynn Autosport car, which has led in third position in LMP2 at the moment, another 10 seconds further back. And Chris Meese in a prototype for the first time, getting some prototype experience, the Audi driver. Wonder why that could possibly be. Think about the future. Those are the four that are in touch Mees must be off the lead lap now. Yes, he is. So waiting to see what the night brings. Track temp, as we said it would, has dropped down to 15 Celsius, which is about the same as what the air is. That's not as cold as it has been at times at Daytona, as the responsible adult has just reminded us. Getting a few hours kip in the car, even under the undercroft of the fantastic Daytona Stadium terracing. It can get very chilly, Jeremy Shaw, in the overnight hours.
Well, I can remember frosts here in the past, and certainly lingering fogs, which cause long delays in the proceedings going way, way back. Yeah, the weather can do just about anything this time of year in this part of Florida. Generally, it's what I would say pretty nice. Temperatures in the sort of 60s or 70s, and I think that's what we've had this weekend. What did you say the temperature was now?
15 Celsius. Yeah.
Which is, that's fairly cool, isn't it? Certainly. What's that in American numbers?
I don't know.
62, 63. Yeah. So that's, for overnight hours, that's not bad at all. It's certainly a different racetrack now, so far as these cars are concerned, let alone the drivers, than it was during the day when the sun was beating down on the track. And that's one of the great things about this event in particular, the fact it does take place kind of this time of year, where there's probably more variation in the weather than there is at somewhere like Le Mans in the middle of the summertime. It's been dry all the way along. I think the forecast is dry for all the way through this race. So, we've been blessed with super weather this week. And right now, the drivers seem to be enjoying these sort of conditions, because the cars are being pretty consistent under these nighttime conditions.
It's Jeremy Shaw. I'm John Hindorf. This is IMSA Radio, around the world and around the track. Time to go live in sound and vision with our network TV partners.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the overnight hours. This is John Hindorf and the rest of the IMSA Radio, IMSA TV crew from the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Delighted to be linking up with you in the United States. I know many of you may have been listening to us already on imsaradio.com. Jeremy Shaw is with me in the Global Broadcast Centre, and Nick Damon is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. We've got 3 hours of time with you whilst our colleagues from NBC take some well-earned rest. And the story of the 59th running of the Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona continues, as we're, 40 minutes away from half distance still. And it's a story so far, Jeremy, that at the front of the field has absolutely ebbed and flowed between the top 4, 5, possibly still even 6, with the Mazda 3 laps down now. But in this form of racing, with the potential for laps back under yellows, those top 6 prototypes are still very much in with the chance of their drivers taking home a lovely Rolex Daytona Cosmograph.
I'd say the race is wide open. As you say, we're not even to the halfway point in this race. It's been a tremendously enjoyable race so far from my perspective. There were some caution periods earlier on which kind of broke the flow a little bit. But since then, we've had some long green flag periods. Once was almost 4 hours, another one was about 3.5 hours as well. So, there have been some caution periods, but not that many. And we've had some tremendous battling going on. Right now, we've got a fantastic battle for the lead, because Philippe Albuquerque is coming under intense pressure from Simon Pagenaud in that Ally car number 48. The Acura, then, versus the Cadillac.
And this is where we see the respective performance of those two chassis and the two different engines, and they are very close together now, as it's all getting tight at the sharp end of the field. Albuquerque and Pagenaud, the 10 and the 48. That's the black and blue car. Coming in the tri-oval now. Headlights still shining. Well lit, of course. But still a different racetrack than it will be sometime after a quarter past, a half past seven this morning. Try round the outside. Pagenaud, very racy indeed at turn one, but had the door gently closed. I don't think it was exactly slammed in his face there, but it was pushed closed rather quickly by the leader, as is his right. He was on the racing line, Philippe Albuquerque. In terms of where they are in their runs, they've both been into the pits relatively recently. Albuquerque is about halfway through his stint. 22 laps is what we're getting out of the DPIs, or thereabouts. A little bit more if there's some full course caution, full course yellow. Pagenaud's two laps worse off. Third place, Kevin Magnussen, is again on 10 laps. And in the Whelen Engineering Cadillac, Chase Elliott also 10 laps out of the pit. So nothing really, Jeremy, to choose between the strategy of those cars. So it will be down to traffic and quite clearly the pace of the drivers. The only thing that might be different is who's got better tyres, but as they've all been in for roughly the same amount of time, Albuquerque and Pagenaud both onto their third stint in the car. So I would suggest, Mr. Shaw, that their Michelin tyres will be of the same kind of vintage. And again, Pagenaud tries around the outside at turn one with a little bit of cover in front of them, as they have traffic which they deal with rather nicely. So really now this is down to the nut behind the wheel and the battle for the lead, with still 12 and a half hours to go.
Indeed, you know, working their way through the traffic here, there's the slower cars are just about everywhere they look. But the last three laps for these leaders have all been within 0.2 of a second for each of them. So there's absolutely nothing to choose between them. You're right, they're running, you know, they're about halfway through a stint now. They've done 11 laps since the last pit stop. And you're right, they're getting between 21 or 22 laps. It's kind of been interesting to see who gets 21, who gets 22. Occasionally there's a short stint in there, but generally speaking they want to run as long as they possibly can. And if they can save a little bit of fuel, you're running behind somebody else here, for Simon Pagenaud in the slipstream of Philippe Albuquerque, you can use a little bit less fuel in that second place car, and that's a good place to be. Yeah, if you can save a little bit of fuel, maybe do a lap longer or take on a little bit less fuel at your next stop, perhaps you can leapfrog the other guy in the pits. It's always going to be a lot easier to make a pass in the pit lane or during the pit stops than it is out on the racetrack, as Simon Pagenaud is just finding out.
Yeah, they are very closely matched. These DPIs based on the current LMP2 chassis, just for chassis manufacturers mandated by the ACO and then taken on by IMSA a few years ago now. There is a new LMP2 chassis coming out this year from the Sim4 manufacturers, and that will be the basis of DPI 2.0, the successor to this highly successful formula that IMSA brought in a few years ago. Some detailed changes, a mild hybrid system as well, but really not playing with the formula too much. And why should they, with the manufacturers that they've got involved here in North America? And we'll see those here at Daytona in January 2023. And with Audi and Porsche already having committed to that DPI 2.0, LMDH as it's known for the ACO world, and both of them mentioning in their statements of intent press releases that they want to be here in the US and in IMSA, I've no doubt at all that one of the reasons we're seeing so many works drivers, Chris Meese for example, out on the track at the moment in fourth place in LMP2 for Dragon Speed, Audi driver, getting some LMP2 experience, hasn't driven the prototypes before, but that's what's coming down the pipe fairly shortly. And it's a very good morning up on top of the grandstand, the main grandstand at Daytona, to Ray Wenzel Jr., rooftop Ray, with us as tradition dictates. Do you know, with everything else that's going on in the 12 months that we are looking behind us to now, there's something rather comforting about talking about racing cars on a date that we expected, at a venue that we expected, and having rooftop Ray Fulham it for us as the cars are on the infield. And we get the nod, which is what everybody wanted on Twitter. If you want to get in touch with us during this segment, by the way, it's hashtag R24Radio, R24 for Rolex 24, R24 Radio at IMSA Radio. That'll bring your tweet straight into the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. So, 42 running around at the moment. The 48, excuse me, running around the back of the circuit at the moment. Nick Damon has an update for us from the VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock report. GT Le Mans stops.
Yep, it's the last running, of course, of GT Le Mans.
Good
at
point.
Daytona. They've gone through a complete rotation again. The cars are ranking between 25 and 33 laps, depending on where they are in their individual cycles. But it's been in and outs for Nick Tandy and Jordan Taylor in the two leading Corvettes, the 4 and the 3. Jesse Cron and Jules Gounon, the BMW Jesse Cron, he stayed on board again after 30 laps. Both the Corvettes did 33, by the way, on the fuel tank. Gounon did 30 as well for the Easy Competition Ferrari. He was in about three laps ago and slightly out of sync. It's the 25 BMW. And also, more importantly, Bruno Spengler handed his car over to Philip Eng, who always seems to be at least one letter short for his surname.
Good job we didn't have Engstler and Enger as well in this race. That would have been too much for my poor little brain at this time of the morning. So 4-3, 24-62 in GT Le Mans. LMP3, 74 Riley from Moulin Motorsports, but there's laps between those and another further lap back to Sean Creech Motorsport, the 33. That's that category being split up a wee bit. GTD we haven't spoken about for a while, and as we're catching up with a few of the leaders, let's see if we can spot the number 57 of Mauro Engel for Wynwood Racing. Their first go at the GT3 at the Daytona Rolex 24, and the car is on the infield at the moment, just going through the kink with Mauro on board. He's got a decent lead, you know, 30 seconds, Jeremy, back to Daniel Serra for AF Corsa. 3 seconds there to the Sun Energy One car, which is gaining a bit, losing a bit. The Sun Energy One, number 75, being run by Gradient Racing. Andrus and the rest of the team taking that on. Andrus has got a fantastic racing brain. And those top three then, separated by a little over half a minute. Then it's Darren Turner, former Works Aston Martin. I suppose he still is a Works Aston Martin driver. There's just no Works GT Racing from Aston. So he's loaned out to Heart of Racing team in fourth position, another 22 seconds further back. Good run here for Wynwood, Jeremy, leading in GT Daytona at their first time of asking in this class.
Yeah, very impressive run for Wynwood. You're absolutely right, because yeah, all four drivers have done an exemplary job so far. They've been nice and consistent. I don't think they've been perhaps blindingly quick. That's not what it takes, though, is it, to win a 24-hour race? They've been consistent, and they haven't put a wheel wrong yet. And let's hope it stays that way. Russell Ward, Mauro Engel, Indy Doncha, and Philip Ellis, the drivers in that number 57 car. And that car looks absolutely spotless. It really does. And you know, he's doing a good job there to let some of the faster cars go past him on the infield section. And you know, just doing exactly what he needs to do. We're still half an hour away from the half point in this race.
Coming through the trioval now to complete another lap. Philippe Albuquerque less than half a second ahead of the Allied Cadillac. This traffic has played its part. And those two cars very close together. And Kevin Magnussen taking half a second or so out of them on the last couple of laps has got within 3 seconds now. So that's the 10 Acura and then the two Cadillacs, the 48 and the 01, with Kevin Magnussen making his debut, of course, in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. But as has been pointed out, it's not as if he's coming into this with no knowledge. Former Formula One pilot for Haas and has been to many races in the past and watched even more because of the participation of his dad, Jan Magnussen. They, I suppose they could, in theory, at some part of the season, be battling against each other at some time. Kevin got a European and World Championship programme. Jan got a European programme up his sleeve for this year in prototype racing. Spent a long time with Corvette. And Kevin, I think the last time I saw Kevin at an IMSA race, Jeremy, was when he was I want to say it was Petit Le Mans at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta a couple or 3 years ago. It's probably longer than that now. But he was effectively on a free weekend from his quote-unquote day job. I think he was on babysitting duty for his dad.
Yeah, put him to work, why not?
Yeah, like absolutely. Absolutely right. This is getting spicy at the front now, Jeremy. Yeah. Pagenaud's closed up now, and with a little bit of traffic as they go by the AF Corsa Ferrari in the infield section. Pagenaud's got to be close now if he wants to take advantage of any little slip or stumble by the leader when he comes up to lap cars.
No, it's been good. It's been a fine drive by all these three at the moment. Chase Elliott, the NASCAR Cup Series champion, is running in fourth position now. Yes, he's losing a little bit of ground to the leaders, maybe up 3/4 of a second a lap or so. But look, given his lack of experience in this sort of a car, he's doing a really good job. And I think puts it into perspective how good a job he's doing is the fact that he is maintaining the same advantage over the car behind him. And that's driven by Olivier Pla, who is one of the best in the business in sports car racing. He's been driving this sort of cars for a long, long time and knows exactly, you know, how to get the job done here at Daytona, does Olivier Pla, because he hasn't actually won this race before. He's finished second. He's won everything else pretty much in sports car racing. So for Chase Elliott to be doing as well as he is, holding in their fourth position and maintaining that gap to Pla, says a lot about this young man. He hadn't driven the car at all until he got to the raw test just a week ago. He was unable to make it to the test that the team had at Daytona in December, but boy, he's learned quickly. Mm. And this is, yeah, I gather he was a little bit disappointed after his first stint earlier in the evening.
Really?
But apparently, so we were told. I thought he was doing fine. I mean, yeah, he kept it clean and did what I thought was a really good job, and he's doing an even better job now in his second turn at the wheel of this car during this race. So
Jeremy, look at the car. I mean, it's dirty a little bit, but it looks like it's rolled off the truck, and that's exactly, you know, in our Porsche Keys to Race that we were talking about in Michelin Countdown to Green some 11 and a bit hours ago, nearly 12 hours ago, we said about high noon being a key to the race, and what we meant by that is get to midday on Sunday. You've got 3 hours and 40 minutes left from there on. Assess what your situation is, where you are in the context of your class, and what resources you've got left to play with. He's doing absolutely the right job. He's not overtaxing himself or the car, and he's reeling the laps off. And when you look at his lap times, right, as you said, he's not going to be as fast as somebody who's got years in this type of racing. But look at how consistent he is. There's two things nowadays that endurance racing drivers talk about. And that is your stint average in terms of your laps. And that's everything other than your in and out lap, whether there's traffic or not, and your variance. So from your best lap to your worst lap in that stint. And the really good guys are within around about a percentage point, maybe 1.5% of their times over their stint of 35 to 40 minutes, two or three and four times. Into the pit lane, the joy at the front of the field is broken up as we have a pit stop for the number 48 Cadillac. Nick Damon is watching this one.
Yeah, Ally Cadillac comes in after only a 20-lap run. It's an interesting variance in the long run length. You would normally run to the fuel, which appears to be 22 if you get a little bit of towing around and an ease of the traffic, or 21 in free air. Simon Pagenaud, just the 20. He's got a nice new set of boots. They seem to do it every single stop. And away he goes in the Ally Cadillac, which is, I think is a rather nice colour scheme. I quite like that one.
That's the silver and purple. Now watch the timing and scoring via IMSA.com if you haven't already got that up, because two, possibly three laps, Jeremy, Simon, as good as he is, will not be able to put the times in for two reasons. One, the car is heavy because it's full of VP racing fuel, but two, the tyres are cold. No tyre warmers of any description allowed in IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship Racing, so the Michelins have to get energy put through them by the driver and the car to bring them up to temperature and, of course, to pressure.
Exactly right, and that's how it should be in my book. 21 laps in, I reckon that was. I think his last
pit stop
for 48 was 367 to 388. That's about what that car has been doing most of the way through the race. I don't think it's ever done more than 21 laps, actually. No, it hasn't. Just looking back through the race. Some of the other cars have been getting 22, but not the 48 yet. But that's fine. You know, it's not costing them anything appreciable. And another nice, clean pit stop for that team. Actually, Mike Rockenfeller taking over the wheel of that number 48 car. It's been just about 2 hours since Pagenaud climbed aboard that number 48 car. It's now Mike Rockenfeller who will take it on from here.
Getting up the speed, getting those Michelins warmed through. Quite a few of the teams, Jeremy, in the early running, the entire allocation for the weekend started at the first free practice session on Thursday, as Ollie Plar brings the Mayershank Racing Acura in. Nick will watch this for us. There's going to be a driver change and full service for that car, so four new Michelins. A lot of teams actually scrubbing tyres in for particularly the night time hours. What's the thinking behind that, putting a bit of wear onto them?
Excuse me, John.
A lot of teams in the early part of the week scrubbing sets of tyres, yes, in, particularly for these nighttime hours.
That's right, yeah. When the tyres are brand new, they have a kind of a sheen on them, and if you just break that sheen and just get down to the working part of the rubber, if you like, then yes, they will spend a lot of time during the practice days just making sure that everything is in tune for the race. The tyres are ready to go. As you say, there's no tyre warmers, but at least the edge can be taken off the tyre, and so they have as good a grip as they're going to get right away off the mark. Is our leader into the pits as well.
And that's spot on time as well. Nick, that was a full change then for the number 48 and a new driver installed.
Should be on rotation Juan Pablo Montoya, but things change at night, as we know. It can get different, but I can't see why he wouldn't put one into the car. 20 laps again for Philippe Albuquerque and Chase Elliott, but Ollie Plar did 22 laps before handing this car over. So it's all up and down as we go. Really, it is so dependent on traffic. If you can sit behind and get a tow, you can save so much fuel. Or if you're lifty and coasting because you can't get past that GTLM car into the bus stop.
Juan Montoya confirmed in the Mayershank card. It was Mike Rockenfeller that took over the Ally Cadillac machine. Jeremy?
Yeah, the two Acuras, they've been regularly getting 22 laps on each of their sits. Number 10 car for Konica Minolta team and number 60 for Mayershank Racing with Kerbager Jr. They've regularly been getting 22s. The Cadillacs, normally 21, occasionally 22. Certainly something to keep an eye on, particularly for much later in the race.
31 wheel and Cadillac in and out. Philippe Albuquerque, by the way, stayed in the number 10, Windtaylor Racing Acura, and Chase Elliott stayed in the 31 as Kevin Magnussen in the Chip Ganassi 01 comes in, having obviously taken over the lead. But this is that same pit stop cycle. They haven't split up too much since the last full course caution, which brought everybody in pretty much on the same lap. That was some one hour 11 minutes ago. Nick Damon with his VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock report.
Yeah, I mean, I know it sounds like we're underplaying it, but it's really just cars turning laps, and they're doing a fantastic performance, because you can go away and you come back 3 hours later and all the cars are still running. It's very, very impressive, because they've managed to avoid the constant problems left, right and the centre on every single lap you go past people.
Thank you, Nick. Ganassi car Jeremy also getting good fuel mileage, as well as the Chetelaar leader in LMP2 comes in. That's the blue and green number 47, Giorgio Scherner Giotto. Now the door is open. Did he get out? Yes, I think he did. We're bolting a new driver into that car. Sometimes they fake us out and just hand in a new bottle. Looks like it's taking a long time. The key is, was it finished by the time the fuel came out? The answer is just about in that case. So they didn't actually lose much more than a second or two. And the Chetelaar Dallara heads back into the free. Quite a tricky pit exit here, Jeremy. Very easy to overshoot that and end up getting onto the grass. Or worse still, hit the retaining wall three quarters of the way round. And in the old days, when the pit lane speed limiter was at the beginning of that left-hander, quite a few people got a little over-ambitious with the throttle and cold tyres down through the years.
You're absolutely right. It's happened at least twice this week. Two or three times, actually. I think the German driver, Zimmermann, Tim Zimmermann in the grass-racing Lamborghini. Alan Metney in the NTE Sport Audi also had a crash there during the practice sessions. In fact, missed the last practice session because they had to wait until last night. They needed some extra bits they didn't have. They were flown in from Detroit to get that car out for the race today. So there's at least two instances I can think of off the top of my head, even at this age in the evening. So yes, it's not unusual at all, unfortunately.
Few people asking about the GTD Pro announcement that we got earlier this week. We'll talk about that when we next take a look at the current top GT class and maybe have a word with a couple of people in the current GTD category. But if you missed that was on early part of this week with IMSA saying that from 2022, so this race next year, the GT Le Mans factory GT class will disappear. Those cars will probably not be eligible. There's some discussion about whether the Ferrari is one of the ones that can be retro converted back down to a GT3 spec, and whether we've got a GM brand that could go into that is a question mark. But Laura Wontrup-Clauser, who is the new head of sports car racing programmes, was talked to us on Wednesday on our magazine show Midweek Motorsport over on our sister channel RS1, and said they are looking at everything. It could be a Camaro, it could be a Corvette. If you want to listen to that, by the way, just go to imsaradio.com and you'll see the Midweek Motorsport side of the page. You can download it from there or you can listen on demand. Very, very interesting to hear. Let's go to a GT Daytona driver. May have some thoughts on this. Delighted to say that joining us in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre is Patrick Long. Oh, and just as we say that, he's disappeared from the line. Hello, Pat. I've got a feeling that noise that I heard meant that that's a disconnection. Yes, it is. We'll get him back in just a moment. The vagaries of technology. Pat, the ever affable Californian. I think if you cut him in half, he would have the Porsche shield somewhere. So we'll have a chat with him. He's in the 16 right Porsche. Pat Long, sorry about that. The vagaries of working in these strap times. Can you hear us now here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre? Nope. Clearly not. Every time we try to talk to him, that's disappearing. How annoying is that? We'll give that one more go in a second. The car. I wonder if he is busy doing something at the moment. The car running in seventh in class at the moment for Wright Motorsport. It's the teal blue Porsche. And Earl Bamber just getting a lap back from them in the number 88 Team Hardpoint Earl Bamber Motorsport Porsche. It's the lighter colour of the two Porsches on the infield at the moment. The right car, the number 16. Good pace early on. Trent Hindman behind the wheel. He's only 3 seconds behind Madison Snow in the Paul Miller Racing car. And they've had their trials and tribulations already in this race. But if we know anything about Wright, and we do, is number one, Jeremy, they know how to get Porsches to the end of motor races. And number two, they won't give up. Let's give it one more go with Pat Long. Pat, can you hear us now?
Hey, how are you guys? Yeah, I can hear you, John.
Hey, good to hear you, mate. How you? First of all, how are you feeling?
A little banged up. I mean, three hours in a 4 hour period is about the old man's limit. But yeah, we're still throwing on. Unfortunately, as you guys probably have talked about, we got sort of collected by the 9 car, and the car's a little bit banged up. But just had to kind of keep my head in it and soldier through.
Yeah, a bit of Porsche on Porsche, Vysak on Vysak action going on there. Not ideal, but a damage just in front of the left rear wheel. How is that affecting the handling of the car, Pat?
The toe's knocked out a little bit, and the left rocker's got a big hole in it, as well as the fender, so that's not doing us any favors on the straights. But yeah, that, and there's no left-hand mirror. So my first stint, I had no radio communication, and that was wild in itself. And then I get back in, and I'm all excited that I finally have a working radio, and I can hear the spotter. And then there's no left mirror. So yeah, we're gonna get this all behind us here, and have a fresh car and a new perspective when the sun comes up.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. Come on, it can't be that bad. At Sebring, at the back end of last season, you ended up doing a full stint with a car that you had to make some changes to, found out you'd had a broken shock absorber, and you were still putting decent times in. Pah, this is a piece of cake compared to that, surely.
Well, I guess the heritage of Porsche and endurance racing is that they're tough cars. You run them hard, you rev them hard, and they keep going. So we're holding on tight and just trying to keep perspective.
Pat, we've been talking quite a lot, and the listeners tweeting in at IMSA Radio, of course, about GTD Pro for next year. You've driven in just about every category in IMSA down through the years, from the prototypes through the GT classes as well. IMSA had to do something about the situation in GT Le Mans. Is this the most elegant solution to have a pro, almost a works GTD, GT3 category?
Yeah, I think so. Sustainability, cost savings, globalization, all those things that I think LMDH and GT3 bring to the future of sports car racing, I like it. I'm all about fewer classes, fewer specifications, fewer driver ratings, and let's get back to 2 categories of cars and bring the best drivers out, and you can have a separate podium at the end, but we should just have 2 categories out there. That's my vote.
And will it bring more opportunity, I suppose, is what professional drivers are thinking about. We see a greater incidence now of young drivers who, you know, teens and early 20s, we'd normally expect to be in single-seater racing, who are coming into sports cars. Will it give them the opportunity to make connections with manufacturers as you have done with Porsche down through the years?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those deals where I think that young drivers definitely have to get their shake on the grand stage, and that's what the long race has always represented for me, was a time to come in and join a regular season entrant. These days, man, I can't keep up with all the different categorizations and driver ratings and things. So if it's hard for me to follow, then it's really hard for the fans. And I just want it to be simple. And I want to protect the gentlemen, the real amateurs that put money into the economy of sports car racing. But I also don't think that, you know, if you're a professional, you earn money in this sport. If you're an amateur, you don't. So it's, to me, it's pretty cut and clear.
Yeah, one earns money in, from the sport, the other one puts money into it, I suppose. You were talking about that incident earlier on that banged up the left-hand side of the cars. For those who have pictures and who are listening to us at the moment, we're going to see that again now. What exactly went on down there at Turn 1, Pat?
I only learned about it as I was jumping in the car. As the car arrived into the pit, I could tell that it had taken a pretty big hit. We were just getting ready to change drivers from Jan to myself, and apparently, you know, Steve Bertolotti, who's a stand-up guy and team manager over at FAF, sent a text message to John Wright and just said that Zach missed his breaking point and got it wrong. But I mean, that's third-hand information, so that's what I know. Just getting out of the car now, I'm still sitting in my rental car in a wet racing suit, so I haven't gotten the full story or read anything online yet, but. The bottom line is that it's tough, as Calvin calls it, RG-bargy racing out there, and we're just going to look ahead and just keep trying to push forward.
Listen, I know it's difficult getting changed and with all the protocols going on, so I'm not going to keep you too much longer. I do want to ask you one more thing, and it is Porsche related, if you don't mind. You mentioned LMDH, the new DPI category. That comes in 2023 here at Daytona and for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Porsche have said, yes, please, we'd like some. You're a student of the sport. Could this herald, and again, harking back to what you've just said about the gentleman driver, the customer driver, could this herald a whole new golden era, the like of which we perhaps haven't seen since the 956s and the 962 Porsches?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the Rob Dysons and the Bob Akins and the gentlemen of the sport who, you know, put a car on the grid and put a professional driver in with them, you see some guys that are doing that. Ryan Hardwick is new to the sport and a consummate professional, and he's definitely brought an entry. You know, Ben Keating, there's lots of them. John Potter. You'd hope that, you know, the John Bennett's of the world will keep a prototype in there and keep somebody like Colin driving with him. But at the same time, maybe you'll see some GT entrants, the gentleman entrants that want to have a go. And I think that, you know, controlling costs is going to be the number one attractor to a more vast customer. So that and subscription from all the different manufacturers, which it seems they're lining up to get into this category. So I'm excited for the future of sports car racing. And I think that everybody wants to see good, hard fighting and close racing. And whether it's 2 seconds a lap quicker or slower, I think is almost irrelevant. These cars are so quick these days that, you know, let's focus on, you know, manufacturer involvement, technology transfer, street to road and back and forth to the track. And, yeah, get on with it. I think, you know, there's great racing out there right now. I think tonight, you know, the DPIs have proven that different manufacturers can give an aesthetic to their car and still run within spec. So, yeah, I think it's looking up for the future.
You make an excellent point about the pace. to be honest, because anybody who saw the Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 races on Friday and Thursday, it doesn't matter what the lap time is compared to what is the fastest thing that could go around here. That was superb racing with six cars across the line in less than half a second at the end of the first race. Pat, thanks for joining us here on IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. Go and get yourself cleaned up, get some rest, and best of luck for the rest of the race. Be safe.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy the show.
It's Pat Long from Wright Motorsport Porsche, and he talking there about sitting in his rental car, still in his race suit. Because of the COVID protocols, a lot of drivers are coming in, they're already dressed, and therefore they're going back to their hotel or their RV, which is outside of the bubble in the infield, the RV parking. So when they come back again, they've got to go through the COVID protocols, take another temperature test, you get another sticker for your pass, and they're all colour-coded and have QR codes on them. So very nice of Pat. It's very uncomfortable sitting in damp racing overalls, being asked questions by people. That's possibly the only thing that Pat Long and I have in common, because I've been on the other side of that. Jeremy, a little bit of a problem, we think, for the Wynn Autosport Orica. Running well up, it was, in the LMP2 category. Tristan Nunes brought that car in a wee while ago whilst I was talking to Pat there in that VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock update, and it's not left yet.
I think he's at... Oh, has it? It might have come back in again. I think it's come back in again, actually.
Because, oh, you're right. It has. Come straight back in. You're right.
It came in. It spent a goodly time, part of the race, a goodly portion of the race in the lead of the category. It was running third when Tristan brought it in. There's a brake problem with the car. They were thinking it was a left front rotor, and they've changed that. And they think all was well, but now they think it's the car is back in the pits now. And I just heard from Jaina, what? Thank you, Jaina, that they're actually going to change the other three rotors on that car as well. So it's going to be a full brake change in effect now for that number 11 car. So it had lost a couple of laps, probably will lose a couple more now.